Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy, sports, and politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.
Welcome, welcome, welcome once again on a Thursday night, 8 p.m., chilly night on the East Coast. I am your host, JT, and this happens to be, as always, on this time of night and this time of the week, is the FSP Crew Show. Like I said, I'm your host, and along with my co-host, I'm trying to find out where my other co-host is, but for now, my other co-host, Jeff the Joker, and I are going to be engaging in conversation and give you information that's going to relate definitely about the coaching hires throughout the NFL with fantasy and with sports, particularly the NFL. And we may not delve into any kind of politics today, but that's part of the show. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics. The number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. If you've been listening to the show, you know what the number is. If you haven't, I just gave it to you. You want to call in and talk to Jeff or I or both of us or question or whatever in the chat room, you can do that. It's always open for your convenience and for your pleasure also. We're going to be talking about, like I said, we're going to be talking about NFL hires. We're going to be talking about a Notre Dame star that seems like he's trying to play a college prank on the world, and whatever else may pop up. Before we get there, let's bring in my one co-host that I have here, looking for my other co-host. But we got I'm not going to shortchange the one I have, Jeff the Joker. Welcome, my man, tonight.
Thank you very much, Jerry. I'm glad to be here.
Okay. Now, Jeff, like I said, one of the things I wanted to talk about, and it's been all over the news, especially the sporting news, and including some national news, about this kid. This famed college, Notre Dame, that's been like America's sweetheart college for decades. Absolute decades, and they fell what happened to fall in love with it because over a period of years, this school had fallen on hard times, especially in a football sense. And finally, they got a coach in there, Brian Kelly, that helped produce a very good team that was undefeated going into the BCS championship. And they had a heartwarming story about one of their outstanding players who happened to be a Heisman Trophy candidate, calling Monte Teo, and a heartbreaking story, because the fact is, besides both his grandparents being lost to cancer, supposedly, his girlfriend was lost to cancer. Now I have a clip that I'm going to play, Jeff. And then we're going to come back and talk about it a little bit more about this downtrodden a guy of Monte Teo and what's happening. Let me play the clip, and then we'll be right back.
This evening, a huge story caught everyone by surprise, a love story that led to a kind of sensational hoax. The star athlete for the Notre Dame football team riveted the nation with his inspiring story of a girlfriend who had died of leukemia right before a crucial game. It turns out that girl apparently never existed. ABC's Dan Harris explains the incredible tale of fame and deception.
It was one of the most dramatic and emotional stories in recent sports history. Manti Te'o, the star linebacker for Notre Dame, enduring the death of both his grandmother and then his girlfriend, Lene Kakua, within just 6 hours.
You take the love of my life. Last thing she said to me was, I love you.
Te'o then went on to lead his team to a series of epic victories. Propelled by his success and his story, he was a finalist for the Heisman Trophy. All along, he spoke freely about his twin tragedies.
My older brother called me, and he was just crying and crying and crying. And that's when I kind of knew, but I was still in denial.
But tonight, word that girlfriend, Lene Kakua, never existed at all. The story, first reported on the sports news website Deadspin, says she was a hoax, and that the picture we all saw was of another woman who is very much alive and says she doesn't know Te'o at all. Late today, Notre Dame released a statement that coaches were informed by Te'o and his parents that the star had been the victim of what appears to be a hoax. The college says someone using the fictitious name Lene Kakua apparently ingratiated herself with Manti and then conspired with others to lead him to believe she had tragically died of leukemia. The question, was this a case of catfishing, a term based on a documentary about a young man who's fooled into an online romance with a woman pretending to be somebody else? Te'o himself has now issued a statement to our partner network ESPN saying he developed what he thought was an authentic emotional relationship with a woman he met on the internet and that they communicated both online and on the phone. He calls this entire episode incredibly embarrassing. That's a direct quote. And he says he hopes others can learn from it.
Twists and turns of a modern world and a modern era.
All right, Jeff, before I have you comment, I got a caller coming in, so let me take this caller and see what they have to say on whatever they want to talk about.
Hello.
Yes, caller from the 620. Welcome to the FSP Crew Show. State your name and tell us what you have to say.
Hey, this is Sean McIntosh. I was just wanting to see. I understood. I heard that little clip you guys were playing about Manti Te'o and the whole fake girlfriend thing.
Right. What do you got to say about it?
I was going to say. I can believe. I mean, I don't know what to believe anymore because half of what people are saying, you know, on the internet and all that. But I'm just saying that, yeah, I think he was part of the victim of, like, just some big old conspiracy thing. And a lot of people are like that, so.
Okay. Do you believe him when he says that he was a victim, or do you think he was part of the hoax?
I'm thinking he might have known, but I'm not 100% certain on that one.
Okay. Jeff, why don't you chime in and give me your comments and what you think?
I'm not 100% sure, but I don't know. There's a lot of inconsistencies in his story, and if I had to pick one way or the other, I hate to say it, I think he was in on it. Got a lot of questions to answer, and by not addressing it, it just gives people more time to speculate. He really needs to have some kind of press conference because this is not going away anytime soon.
Well, I have an article from ProFootballSports.com that relates to what we're talking about, and I'm going to say speak on a few of it. Before he speaks, his handlers need to delve into every nook and cranny of everything that he or she, someone in his family said about the situation, so they'll be ready for the questions he inevitably faces from whoever asks him. Here's a nook and cranny that will open yet another delicate line of questions. According to WSBT-TV, Te'o made reference to his dead girlfriend 2 days after the day he supposedly learned of the hoax. This is a quote from Te'o. I don't like cancer at all. I lost both my grandparents and my girlfriend to cancer, end quote. And he said that on December 8th while talking to reporters in advance of the Heisman Trophy ceremony. On Wednesday, Notre Dame athletic director Jack Swarbrick said Te'o learned of the hoax on December 6th while he was attending the ESPN College Football Awards ceremony in Orlando. But 2 days after that, he made reference to it. Okay, before Te'o speaks, his people need to find every comment that he or anyone in his family has made that will be fodder for interview questions so that he can be prepared to answer the question. This doesn't mean he's not telling the truth. Lawyers routinely prepare witnesses to testify by sharing with them all prior statements that they have made so that they will be careful to tell a consistent and cohesive story. Plenty of people who tell the truth will from time to time misspeak. Now, I can fully understand that. Good thorough preparation protects against that. Even with good preparation, Tao has to be able to pull it off. The fact that there is no indication as to when he'll be talking suggests that Tao's people are concerned that it could be too much for him to juggle verbally and mentally in an inherently stressful situation. So supposedly this was a hoax. When he learned of it being a hoax, he still talked about it a couple days before the Heisman Trophy, but then his athletic director tried to cover him up and said that he learned of the hoax on December 6th. But if he learned it on December 6th, why did he reference to it on December 8th before the Heisman Trophy ceremony? What do you think about that, Jeff?
You know, maybe, I'm not excusing him. Maybe he was still in shock and he wasn't ready to come clean about the story, but you know, one of the things I'm thinking about is, you know, my first thought was he doesn't need the publicity. He's a star linebacker. But he may have wanted some extra publicity for the Heisman campaign. And if you go way back, you might remember, you were very young at the time, but you probably remember, in 1973, John Cappelletti won a Heisman Trophy
right.
while his younger brother was terminally ill with leukemia.
Right.
I mean, I don't think Cappelletti milked that in any way, and unfortunately, the younger brother did pass away, but he did get a lot of publicity because of that, and he won the Heisman, but he was a legitimate candidate, and you never know. Maybe Tao saw, you know, the name of the movie, the made-for-TV movie was based on it, Something for Joey. Maybe he saw Something for Joey on late-night TV and got inspired. And if he's in on the hoax, then he's a very low person in need of serious help. Just someone who would lie like that is obviously sick.
Okay. Well, then I listen to sports radio. I don't know how often you listen to sports radio during the day or how often you get the chance to listen to sports radio from day to day, Jeff. But I listened to some sports radio today. And last night and some TV, and one of the questions that were posed is quite naturally, I think you know where I'm going from here.
I heard things.
Being that he's a senior, and that he's going to definitely try to jump into the NFL draft. Is this going to, in your opinion? Is this going to damage or hurt his possible draft status or where he gets drafted because of this?
Well, it will. I mean, he's going to have to address it. All these teams, they're familiar when guys get into you know, trouble off the field, and every NFL team, you know, they don't just make you run around in your shorts at the combine. They ask you if a guy gets busted for weed or shoplifting or whatever. Every team is going to ask him about it. And, you know, this guy, he's got a lot of questions to answer. And the thing is, I mean, he's a good athlete. He's a very good athlete. He's not an elite athlete. You know, middle linebacker. You want all the guys on your team to have some character. You're going to play that at any job. But do you want a guy who could be a very sick person you're going to invest a first-round pick in? This guy really has a lot of, like Ricky Ricardo to do. He's got some explaining to do.
Well, Black is under the weather. He's in some, let me put it this way. He's under the weather. He's in the chat room. He won't be able to get on the phone, so we'll be conversing with Black on the on over the chat. In my opinion, because there's always a draft every year, they're the few players, a handful of players, that have unique situations, meaning they've gotten in some type of trouble, whether it's law trouble, whether it's drug trouble, whether it's this is probably a very unique type of trouble, but it's still something that it sends a red flag up about a player. But these teams, and one of the things they were saying, Mark Schlereth was talking about, that now I'm trying to think what the guy's name was. Carter from Kansas City. I forget his first name. He used to be a linebacker, and he took a shot at one of the Broncos year. This is going back when Shanahan was with the Broncos. And he said year after year, for about 4 or 5 years, they talk. Shanahan always put up to say, we don't want this type of guy on our team because he lacks the integrity of being on this team. Well, lo and behold, after the fifth year or sixth year, I think it was the sixth year, they happened to sign this guy as the highest paid guy on the roster. My point is this. If the guy's got talent, a lot of these teams think they can fix whatever is wrong with the guy because he's got so much talent. Aqib Talib had a red flag, and he's a very good cornerback. Other guys that have red flags have come into the league and excelled, and some of them have gotten in consistent trouble and excelled, and some of them have turned their lives around when they've gotten into the NFL. So,
but, you know, I think this guy has a different kind of sickness, and I don't know if he's that bad, but you remember Demetrius Underwood?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he might be like that.
Okay. And the guy Black gave me up there is Dale Carter, and you're absolutely right. Dale Carter was not the most cleanest player to come down the pike, and he ended up as one of the highest paid players, if not the highest paid player on the Denver Broncos at one point. So, well, you know, we'll have to wait and see. Black's saying that Teo is a fourth to sixth rounder at best. You know, I've heard things like that he is a tweener. He's not quite big enough to be a linebacker, and he may not have the skills to be a safety. So I don't know exactly, maybe Black, since he's listening, what position do you think Teo is best suited for, a linebacker, a smallest linebacker? And I don't think he's got good coverage skills if he's the smallest linebacker, which smallest linebackers have to be able to cover to make up for their size. Or is he a oversized safety? Maybe Black will answer that. If not, bench? Black saying he's a bench player. He's not even you're telling me he's not even a starter? Well. He still have to have a position, or is he a special teams player? Is he good for special teams? Even though he's got a hell of a career as a linebacker in Notre Dame. And speaking of Notre Dame, there was talk at one point, and we had talked about this. I think we talked about this last week about Chip Kelly. Brian Kelly, the coach of Notre Dame, who teams were the Browns for one, were courting, trying to get him to sign for as their head coach. And we were talking about that these college coaches, some of them, the two Kellys, were leveraging themselves against the NFL. And their college teams, and trying to get the college teams to up the ante in their salaries. And it seems like Brian Kelly was sincere enough that he said he was going back to Notre Dame, that that he wasn't interested in any head coaching job. But it's not what I'm saying is I can't say the same for Chip Kelly, who at one point was a coach at Oregon. Then he was heavily recruited by several teams, including the Eagles. Then he decided, I'm going back to Oregon. And then when all the hoopla of Chip Kelly died down last week, out of the clear blue sky, where no one saw this coming, Chip Kelly signs with the Philadelphia Eagles, and now is the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. Jeff, what do you think about what took place within the last week with Chip Kelly?
You know, these college guys are a little more in demand, and it's a courtship on both sides. And personally, if I was an NFL team, I would seriously consider qualified candidates from college football, but I would definitely strongly prefer ones with pro experience, preferably NFL. I don't know if you remember last week, I said Mark Trestman was looked like he would get an NFL job, and it finally happened. He got the Bears job.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's stay on Chip Kelly for now, because the reason I'm saying I brought up Chip Kelly first is because, believe it or not, this is a quote from the coach. Chip Kelly is a huge fan of Eagles quarterback Nick Foles. He says he's tough. People don't understand how important that is. That's a quote from Chip Kelly. And that's also, he was asked about his preference for a running quarterback. This is another quote from him. I'll say this. There's a perception and reality. Perception is we run our quarterback all the time. Reality is that's not the case. Nothing that's on the board, there's nothing that's off the board. That's regard of Michael Vick. Now, he said he's absolutely a huge fan of Nick Foles. This is what he said about Michael Vick. Then this is a quote. I don't have the answer. I know what a talent he is and have marveled of Michael since he was at Virginia Tech. I was at the University of New Hampshire when Michael was a freshman at Virginia Tech. And we were getting ready to play James Madison. And Virginia Tech has some freshman quarterback, running up and down the field. And I watch him in the NFL, and I don't have any preconceived notions of anyone. I want to meet Michael. I want to talk to Michael, and I want to watch the tape. But there haven't been too many quarterbacks in the history of this game with the skill set that he has. I'm in the process of evaluating everyone on this team. Now, in one breath, he says he's a huge fan of Nick Foles. And on the other breath, he says he has to watch the tape on Michael Vick. What do you think about that?
Hey, you know, a lot of these coaches, they need political skills. So, no, right? I mean,
yeah.
We do it, regular people, you cover yourself. I mean, new job, think about the interview process. And when you get a new job, you just spout off one cliche after another,
Mm-hmm.
And obviously this guy has enough sense to do so. But then, he's going to have to go over film and adjust his staff and make some decisions and whatever. And all of a sudden a lot of people found out this year with the Tim Tebow situation with the Jets that, sometimes these coaches BS players,
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That happens?
Big revelation. It's like this was no shock to anybody over the age of five,
Okay. Well, Black said Kelly is a Dallas Cowboys defensive coordinator, Monty Kiffin's dad. Good hire by the Eagles. I agree it's a good hire. But I just want to move on because I want to cover all these coaches that got hired. But I've been dying to jump on this because I knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of time when it did happen. And I'm glad Black, even though he's not on the phone, he's in the chat room because I want him to respond to what he just referred to just a couple of comments ago. Dallas Cowboys fired Rob Ryan as a defensive coordinator from their team, and they hired Monty Kiffin, who's what in his 70s. He's 72. He's age 72, and he'll be 73 in at the end of next month. 73, and he's in the he's going to be a defensive coordinator, and you know what kind of defense he runs, and he runs the Tampa 2. And Dallas doesn't run the Tampa 2. So, in my opinion, they're going to take a step back in their defensive scheme because the fact is now they're learning another defense other than Rob Ryan. And usually about half the season it takes for a team to adjust and maybe get the idea of a new defense. And the Tampa 2 is going to be, I wouldn't say it's going to be a problem, but it's a new scheme for the same players on the team. What do you think about that, Jeff?
Well, I mean, I think that's what hurts these teams sometimes is they're constantly changing coordinators, changing players, which is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, usually if that's your style, you know, if you're Tampa 2, if that's what style you coach in, you're not going to change it. But a lot of times these coaches who hire these guys don't have the right personnel. And it's the coaches who win are usually the ones who tailor their systems to match the talent. And that's what Andy Reid is doing in KC. In Kansas City, they just a couple of years ago had a really tough switch from the 4-3 to the 3-4. It was a big deal because it requires very different personnel, especially in the front seven. And Reid is going to stick with the 3-4, even though usually, you know, his teams have had 4-3. But mm-hmm. It makes sense, and I give him credit, you know, because that, you know, when teams try to, you know, run one system with the wrong personnel, it's not effective. So, you know, these guys can't be stubborn, you know.
Right. Black says Mr. Drummond from Different Strokes just died, and Kiffin will die after facing Kelly again in the NFL.
and another one, Ryan Leaf is on his way to prison.
Oh, is that right? Okay, I didn't know that.
Big shock.
Okay, yeah, right. Okay, let's run down here. Let's start. I'm gonna start in not alphabetical order, but I'm gonna start in this order, since I got the Bills sitting up here with Doug Marrone as the new head coach of the Buffalo Bills from another college coach coming from the college into the pro ranks. His new offensive coordinator / quarterbacks coach will be Nathaniel Hackett, who is the current offensive coordinator. So he's going to retain the same offensive coordinator that he had that they had last year. So I guess Doug Marrone feels comfortable with him, and he's the son of Paul Hackett, who happened to be a pretty decent offensive caller himself. All right, the defensive quarter, believe it or not, now I didn't understand this one. And it's the reason I brought this up, and it's just by chance it happens to be the defensive coordinator. I don't know if you know who Mike Pettine is, but Mike Pettine happened to be in the Jet organization as an assistant, and now he's a defensive coordinator. He was formerly a defensive coordinator for the New York Jets. And he was an outside linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. But his last job was for the Jets. as a defensive coordinator, and now he's going to be the defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills. What do you think about those two guys under the college coach coming to the pros and what they can do on both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively, and in fantasy also?
You know, I'm not very familiar with those two particular guys, but I think if you watched that Colin Kaepernick last week, maybe they need a college guy to kind of figure out how to defend that kind of offense and that kind of quarterback. You know, maybe that's what the NFL needs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Black said Jerry Jones overreacted. With the firing, Ryan improved the team, improved the D, even with all the guys we had hurt. We have no personnel for the Tampa 2 besides D Ware and Sean Lee. Claiborne is still learning. That's exactly what I was saying. They don't have any personnel for that. So that I think that defense, who was pretty good, not real good but pretty good, is going to take a step back. Because now they're learning a totally different defense. And we have one of our favorite calls on the line. Let me bring him in and say welcome. Welcome, Macau. How you doing, my man?
What's up, sir? How y'all doing this evening?
Okay.
Hey, Macau.
Before we go any further, I listened to your show last night, and I was afraid to jump in on the conversation. I'm going to tell you that right now. I listened to the show, and they were talking about jealousy and possessive and insecurity. And I said, you know what? I'm not jumping in. I'll listen, but I'm not jumping in on this conversation. And I just happened, there was a young lady that called in just before your first hour was to expire, your second hour was to expire. She called in like about 15, 20 seconds before the show went off, and I haven't had a chance to listen to it. Very young, soft-spoken young lady, and what she was talking about, I have to listen to your show because I know it had to set some things off. Of the young ladies that were on the show.
Oh,
so.
My goodness. Yes, she did. Okay. Yeah, I can't tell you. I can't talk about it here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I
definitely have to listen to the archives because I want to see what transpired after the show officially went off the air. So, anyway,
Jerry,
we're talking.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Thank you. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. I like I said, I may not jump in there, but I'm listening. I'm listening. Anyway, we were talking about these new hires coming on board, these new NFL coaches and some of their assistants. And one of the things I was talking about, and I want to get your comments, because you happen to be a fan of one of the teams in the NFC East, which you're going to be facing this team twice, is the hire of Monty Kiffin as the defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys. The old 72-year-old that was with Tampa when Lane Kiffin was there, when John Gruden was there, went to Tennessee with Lane Kiffin, went to USC with his son Lane Kiffin, and then left USC. Now he's with the Dallas Cowboys, and he's going to be running the Tampa 2, which Dallas has never run. Give me your thoughts.
I think it's wonderful. I think it's wonderful. I am so excited about them having Monty there. They're going to be running the Tampa 2. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be lovely. They're going to be exactly where they were last year. I mean, it's just wonderful. I'm ecstatic. I'm Mike Tyson say, I'm ecstatic.
All right, let's move on to this. The next team I want to talk about, and Jeff had mentioned this guy before, and I knew he was on the radar, but I didn't know if he was going to get hired or not, and he did get hired. I'm talking about the Bears' new head coach, which happens to come from the Montreal Alouettes in the CFL, Mark Trestman, who grabs the offensive coordinator. This is very interesting because Mark Trestman is one of the innovators, but one of the guys that runs the West Coast offense very well and with the Niners at one point and ran it very well with the Niners. Now he's with the Bears, and he brings with him the play caller of the New Orleans Saints, who's now an offensive coordinator for Chicago Bears, Aaron Cromer, who was the interim coach for a while, but he was also the play caller when Sean Payton got hurt in that high-powered offense. I'm not going to talk about the defensive coordinator because I think it's more important because of what the problems the Bears had on the offensive side and the dysfunction they had on the offensive line that they've gotten. A head coach who's a West Coast offensive guy and a offensive coordinator who's coming from a prolific offense from the Saints. I want to talk to Jeff first and then Mikal on your thoughts about this.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm not sure if the Bears really needed to get rid of Lovie Smith, but they made that decision, and, Trestman is qualified, it seems. But a part of the head coach's job is he coaches the coaches, and part of the interview process is, as you know, if you're interviewing for a job as a head coach, you have to impress them that you could hire the right coaches and attract the right guys. But Trestman also, in addition to coaching in the CFL, also used to work with quarterbacks when they graduated college and were getting ready for the NFL draft.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years back, one of the guys he worked with was Cutler.
And Tim Tebow. He worked with Tim Tebow, too.
Well, I think Tebow needs more than just a few weeks off-season work.
Right.
And so I guess Trestman is a bit of a quarterback guru, and I guess also the CFL must not pay nearly as much as the NFL because you never see an NFL coach doing something like that.
Right.
I think the Bears are also, they're trying to work with the talent they have, and they have a lot invested in Cutler. And, you know, they finally got a wide receiver. I mean, they figured they're going to bring in an offensive mind. I mean, the thing is, there you go. Now they're going to have another new offense. You know, they tried the Mike Martz offense for a couple years, and then it was Mike Tice. Now it's going to be Trestman. One of the worst examples is poor Alex Smith. He can't learn an offense every year. He's got to learn a new one.
Okay.
And he's always made the best of it and been a pro about it. And, I hope he gets a shot to start somewhere else next year. I know he came in with a lot of hype as the number one pick in the draft, but he never acted like a jerk. He wasn't a Ryan Leaf. You know, he was a good soldier when needed. So I think he's okay. I'd like to see him get a shot somewhere.
All right. How about you there, McCown? What do you think about this guy?
I think this is going to turn out to be a good hire for Chicago. You know, I agree with Jeff. I didn't think they should have got rid of Lovie. I think they probably should have got. I think they've never had the right type of offense for Jay Cutler.
Right.
Because you know what? I tell you what. I like Jay Cutler. I really do. I never thought that, any of his issues were talent, you know, talent-wise. I've always thought he's talented, you know what I mean? And I have a high regard for his talent. Mike March, you know, he's a good offensive guy, but he does not believe in an offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Heist, he's not too far off from Martz, you know, he's a tight end. He's a little tougher. You know, he probably had more scheme protections for that offensive line, but no. This guy is a true, West Coast offense type type of guy, and I think this is the type of offense that Jay Cutler will thrive in, because it's more or less like the offense that you know it came from with the Broncos,
right?
You know,
yep.
So I'm thinking it's going to be a good fit for them. I'm really as far as Chicago's concerned, Chicago should be paying attention to who is going to be running their defense, because that is the bread and butter of that team. As long as Urlacher and Briggs and all of those folks are still over there, they need to pay attention to that. But I like this hire.
I agree with you, God. I do like this hire, and Jay Cutler needs, especially with that offense and offensive line, the West Coast offense, get the ball out quick, short passes, and let the your receiver, whoever is catching the ball, take the ball down the field with these quick short passes through the middle, outside, or whatever. So I think this offense is potentially got a chance to be a little bit more explosive than it has been in the past. So we'll wait and see what happens. Now, the next one I'm going to bring up happens to be one of my old friends, happens to rear his ugly head again, but I have to bring him up because I thought this was a strange hire on both sides. I mean, not both sides, but strange hires at the head coach and then the offensive coordinator. I'm talking about the Cleveland Browns. We get Rod Chudzinski hired as the head coach for the Cleveland Browns, where he formerly was the coach, offensive coordinator for the, if I'm not mistaken, the Carolina Panthers. Okay, he's moved into the head coaching position, and he brings in who used to be his head coach. He used to be under. He brings in none other, one of my favorite coaches in all of football, and I'm saying that sarcastically, because if you guys listen to me or you know me, this guy I cannot stand. I can't stand him as a head coach. Offensive coordinator, he's all right, but I still think he's not one of the best coaches around. But he's got to have some dirt on people in the NFL, because he always seems to be able to find a freaking job. I'm talking about none other than Norvell Turner as the offensive coordinator for the Cleveland Browns. Jeff, no, I'm going to go to McCall first about the head coach and the offensive coordinator hire in the Cleveland Browns. Give me your thoughts, McCall, and then we go to Jeff. Hello? You guys there? Is anybody there? Hello? Is anyone there? Oh, wow. I seem like I lost my connection. No, I haven't lost my connection. What happened to my people? Seems like I'm here all by myself. What happened to my people? Let me see if I can do this and see if they come back. Hello? You guys there? No one's there. Okay. All right, if you guys can hear me, call back and see if I can get back in there. Because for some reason, I haven't lost my internet connection, but I can't hear you. So call back, and we'll go from there. All right? Well, like I said, you know, he happens to be one of my favorite, not my favorite, but he is not one of my favorite coaches, but he, for some reason, is wow, I lost. What the heck is going on here? He happens to be one of my least favorite coaches because the simple fact is that Norvell Turner is not a good coach, but he always seems to find a job for some reason, and I never can understand it. Don't know why, but he always finds another job, and it kills me for that to happen, because I don't understand it, and I'll never understand it, because he's been in the league for so long, and he hasn't done anything worth anything. Macau, you there? Hello, Macau. Hello, Jeff. Well, I agree with you. You keep getting up. Then something must have happened to the Block Talk Radio. If you're getting a busy signal, the timer's still going on. I'm still on the internet, so. I don't know what happened, but hopefully I can get Jeff back and we can continue this conversation. I'm still on the internet. I can get texts from Jeff, ask him. I'm going to ask him through texting. What do you think of the hires in Cleveland? And see what he says. You know, I just like Black. Black in the chat room said that Norv is a great offensive coordinator. Yes, he is. But Trent Richardson, he likes to use a good one back, and Trent Richardson is one of those guys he likes to use, going to be using a lot. So for those who's listening to fantasy, I can guarantee you that Norvell Turner is going to get the most out of, as long as Trent Richardson is healthy, he's going to get the most out of Trent Richardson, because he runs a single back into the ground. And I don't know why I can't receive calls. The callers I have, they lost the connection. Jeff can definitely hear me on the show, but I can't receive phone calls. If Jeff, you can hear me, keep trying and see if you get a busy signal, or for some reason you can call back in and we can continue this conversation. Anyway, I want to move on to we'll go away from the Cleveland Browns. We'll go on to the next new hire. And I don't know too much about this guy. I've read a little bit, but don't know too much about this next guy. Quite naturally, they got rid of their former coach in Jacksonville, and they hired a guy that's Gus Bradley, who's the head coach. He was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers linebackers coach a few years back, and quite recently, up until they got knocked out of the playoffs. He was the defensive coordinator for that very good Seattle Seahawks defense. So you can best believe that one of his signatures on this team is going to be their defense. They have some pretty good pieces in their defense, but they're going to be a very stout defense. Jeff, if you have any comments on that, if you can hear me, give me your comments on the hire of Gus Bradley as the new Jags head coach in the chat room. What about you, Black? You got any comments on that? Then their offensive coordinator is going to be Bob Gronkowski, okay? He's the current offensive coordinator. They didn't can him. So he's going to be the quarterbacks that are the offensive coordinator, and the quarterbacks in Jacksonville will have continuity in their offense. The phone's still busy, so I still have to talk this out. But I think this signature is going to be running the ball. So Maurice Jones-Drew, as always, going to be getting the ball quite a bit. Excuse me. And they're going to be running the ball a lot and playing sound defense. I you can best believe that's going to happen with the Jacksonville Jaguars. As you know, Andy Reid got hired, one of the first ones to get rehired, as the head coach. And Doug Peterson is the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. And he's been in various teams. For the last part, he's been he was the assistant offensive coordinator for the Eagles in 2011, where they set a record with over 6,300 yards. So he's going to be the offensive coordinator along with Andy Reid, and I do believe this offense is going to be passing the ball more, and it's going to be a more explosive offense. I know they're going to try their best to keep Dwayne Bowe in check. And we'll have to go from there. I do believe that the phone lines I think that this thing's going to be more explosive. Jonathan Baldwin, Tony Moriaki, especially Tony Moriaki, is probably going to get a bump up because Andy Reid likes using having the quarterback include the tight end in the offense. So I do believe that Tony Moriaki is going to be more involved, and he may be a sleeper tight end to think about. I know there's quite a few good tight ends out there. This is probably one that you probably can pick up late in the draft, and he may be a blessing in disguise and a nice sleeper. Let me try to call Jeff on the line here and see if I can get Jeff back on the line here. Let me try to call him and see what happens. See if I can get him here.
Hello?
Jeff.
All right. We did it.
All right. Let me try to get McCall in there. See what I didn't think of that before. And I could have called you right back. Oh, there it is. Yeah, he heard me. Now let me call him back and see if I can get him back here for the last 5 minutes of the show. Okay. Bear with me, Jeff, here for a minute. 413-0720. See if I can get him, too. So it's dialing now. See if I can get him. What do you think about the now I'm talking about the Kansas City Chiefs. Sorry about that, guys. I don't know why I didn't think about that before, but calling you guys right back. But how dumb can I be? But what can I tell you? Anyway, that's the typical sports guy talking about sports. Can't think outside the box. Hello. Anyway. what do you think about Andy Reid? I know you guys, that's old news, but I'm talking about Doug Peterson being the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs. Any of your thoughts on that, Jeff or Mikal?
Wow, that's news to me, Doug Peterson. I mean, I remember him. He was great at holding the clipboard for Brett Favre. I mean,
right.
he was one of the all-time greats. I mean, it's a good thing that Favre was so durable, because if they ever had to put Peterson in a game, he would have been behind center with a baseball cap on, holding the clipboard, maybe with a headset, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he got paid good money for that, you know? I mean, this guy was Brett Favre's wingman. That was his job. And believe me, star players get preferred treatment. That's why they kept him around, because he was buddies with Favre.
Right.
I think he backed him up for about 5 years, and then he moved on to hold the clipboard in Philly and whatever, and then they brought him back for like another 5 years.
Right.
And it was just to keep Brett happy. And I'm sure they went out to the bars or whatever, and he's always like, hey, well, you know, Brett's married, but I'm single, you know, whatever. sometimes, you know, hey, North Turner was a backup quarterback. These guys got the best seat in the house. Some of those, Gary Kubiak, you know.
Right.
Some of these guys, they got a good seat. They spend all the time, a lot of time in the quarterback meetings and whatever, and a lot of these guys go on to be good offensive coaches.
Right. But you got any thoughts, Mikal?
Nah, Jeff is giving me a whole lot, is schooling me now. I didn't know all this.
Okay.
I did not know this. I did not know any of this.
Okay.
Wow.
All right, let's move on, because some of these head coaches that got fired, like Norvell, got rehired as offensive coordinators. Well, this next coach did the same thing. He got canned as a head coach, but the offensive coordinator from the Denver Broncos got quickly scooped up the day after, 2 days after they lost, he got quickly scooped up and became the head coach on Monday. That's how quick it was. They played a game on Saturday, lost to the Ravens, and on Monday, Mike McCoy became the head coach of the San Diego Chargers. And who does he bring as his offensive coordinator? Somebody who doesn't know shit from Shinola about a quarterback, because he had so bad quarterbacks when he was the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Offensive coordinator for the San Diego Chargers is Ken Whisenhunt.
Mm.
Give me your thoughts. I'm going to go to Mikal. And then Jeff.
Which team is this again?
The Chargers.
The Chargers. Wow. I'm speechless. Oh, man. I got nothing. I got nothing.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. Talk to me, Jeff.
I don't know if Whisenhunt is solely to blame for that disaster in Arizona. I mean, I don't think he was the GM down there. I'll tell you, I mean, I'm still, the dust is still settling with all these coaching moves. But I guess that's what the off season is for, you know, to try to figure out, how the coaches fit in with the teams, and then pretty soon we're going to have free agency in the draft, and then, you know, by the time the fantasy drafts roll around, we'll know inside out who's who.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, with these teams, with these coaching openings, especially the head coaching job, it's such an important decision, and they have such a short time to make it. You know, it's unreal.
Right.
You know, it really, really is. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of these teams want a head start. I mean, usually they wait till the day after the season is over, you know, so they can get a jump on it. But believe me, I don't think they wait till then to start the search. They just make it official the day after the season, you know.
Right. And last but not least, we talked about him briefly. Chip Kelly happens to be the Eagles head coach. And as far as I can tell, as far as I'm reading, the assistant head coach slash offensive coordinator is still the same one that was there when Andy Reid was there, and that's Marty Morningwick. Mikal wasn't here earlier for the conversation, so I'm going to ask him what he thinks about Chip Kelly being the head coach and Marty Morningwick still staying there as the offensive coordinator for the Eagles.
I'm a little surprised that Chip took the job or whatever. I think it's a good move to keep Morningwick there while you have the good college coach coming in, getting his bones about him or whatever. You know, hopefully it'll turn out in their favor. But honestly, I just hope they, you know, continue to lose for the next 3 years. That'll be just wonderful. Just wonderful. They could be right at the bottom of the NFC East where they belong.
Okay. Well, we are a little over in overtime, so but we're going to be getting out of here right now.
Hold up. Please tell me you guys have talked about the full Monty.
Monte Teo.
Yes.
Yes. Well,
yes.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. We talked about it in the beginning of the show, and quite naturally you weren't here. So since you're here now, you give me your thoughts on Monte Teo and is he a victim or is he a willing participant in this hoax?
Y'all gonna have to sit down and brace yourselves for what I'm about to say, y'all.
Okay.
I don't think he's a victim. I do not think he's a victim. I do not believe that he did not participate in it. So I'm saying he did participate in it fully, willingly, everything, right? And the only thing that I could come up with as to why he would just perpetrate all of this stuff, I mean, it's not enough for me to sit here and say that he manufactured the story in order for him to have a story to play up to, you know, the Heisman. I don't think that's enough. There's something more there. There's something more more devastating there. And to have Notre Dame to follow all into it too, I just don't think that's enough. I think the young fella is gay.
Really?
I think the young fella is gay. Yeah. I mean, why would you perpetrate and act like you have some girlfriend? I mean, it's just pointless. And then the whole charade with it, how he played with it, played on the story and made it so romanticized for the whole public. I mean, so willingly. Nah, bruh. The bad and the sad part about it is my theory we won't even know for a good 3, maybe 4 years because he's got to play football. He's got to come in the NFL. He ain't gonna come in. He's not going to come into the NFL out. That ain't happening.
Wow.
So, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, with that being said, that's a hell of a note to end this show, but it is what it is. So one thing I have to say is, Black, I hope you feel better. I've been there. I'm probably not as bad as what you are telling us you feel, but I hope you feel better, because that's not a good feeling when you got issues like that. I'll give it to Jeff and then Macau on any closing comments before we get out of here.
Well, I got to get running. It's been real. Everybody, 99.9% of the people keep telling the truth, and join us next week, and we'll probably know more about Teo soon, and week's a long time. We're going to know a little bit more, and the story's not going away. That young man needs to have a press conference, because it only leads to more speculation. And what Macau said, a lot of guys were saying on New York sports radio, and by not having a press conference, it leads to speculation. So he's got a man up. He needs, I really think he's a sick individual and need a professional help, but enough, because there's a lot better things to talk about than sick people. And it's been real, and thanks for joining us.
Take care, Jeff.
Take care, Jeff. Yo, you got to check out that story on deadspin.com. Those people put it down. I mean, they break it out in the different timelines. They coordinate the different articles, the different when he was interviewed, when Notre Dame was interviewed, when he was on SI, all those pieces, and they just put it all out there for you to see. And like Jeff said, I'm not privy enough to hear some of the New York radio stations or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That was just my surmise of it when I read everything. Yo, I want to give a shout out to the Soldier Black, hang in there, bro. You know what I'm saying? I've been through that too. And just rest yourself. You know, like I said to you in the chat, my prayers are with you, bro. Hope you feel better.
All right. With that being said, I want to thank Macau for joining me. I want to thank Jeff for joining me, and Black joining me in the chat room for as much as he could. Tune in next week, 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, be the FSP Crew Show hour. And with that being said, I don't have too much more to say, but we're out of here. See you, Macau.
Peace.
Yeah. It's Mr. Encore. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Check. Fantasy Sports and Politics. Ain't no other talk show hot as this. Cover every sport and we get it all right. Log on the site, you can listen tonight. Talk about the game, who in first place. You can even call up, state your own case. Football, b-ball, soccer too. Log on, ain't nobody stopping you. It's Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, come on. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Fantasy Sports and Politics Crew. Yeah, log on.